runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 308 with guest Heath Graves, recorded Thursday, March 7th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Plop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Heath Graves, and Heath is a premier field engineer that specializes in exchange. He finished his time in the U.S. Air Force in 2007 and began working in consulting as a SharePoint engineer and administrator. He joined Microsoft in 2010 and has worked as a dedicated support engineer within the public sector, where his focus is on exchange troubleshooting, configuration optimization, performance tuning, and knowledge transfer. Welcome, Heath.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, sir. So what are you working on these days?
Well, currently, like I said, I'm a dedicated support engineer. I'm located out in St. Louis, supporting a government customer, and doing things like helping them with their deployments of Exchange over the past couple of years, all the way from 2003 into 2007, now moving into Exchange 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So, good times.
Are we talking major mailboxes here?
My customer is somewhere around 2,000 to 3,000 mailboxes, so not a huge environment.
Sure.
But yeah, still important nonetheless.
Well, email is one of those things that everybody's just kind of afraid of. I know Exchange Server is the only piece of Microsoft technology that really scares me. But that's just because downtime is so mysterious. You don't know if you've lost stuff. It's just like email's voodoo. So you talk about configuration management around Exchange. What do you really mean by that?
All right. Well, let me go back a little bit and talk about kind of the where I came out of.
Mm-hmm.
I came out of the United States Air Force, and I'm not your typical tech guy. A lot of the shows that I listened to in the past, a lot of the tech guys that I'm surrounded by, that's all they've done in their past.
What did you do for the Air Force?
So, back in 1998, I joined the Air Force, came in as a hydraulic mechanic, and I thought, hydraulics, what is that, you know, on aircraft? And so, the recruiter, when I came in, he told me, you know, hydraulics, you deal with water. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool, sure, let's do it, you know.
What?
So I come in, and they're like, no, you're going to be turning wrenches on airplanes, and you're going to be messing with oil and hydraulic fluid and all that good stuff. So
right.
I'm like, oh, okay, you know. So as a young guy, I come in, and you know, one of the first things they told us was, you know, safety, 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 and you got to follow instructions. You got to do things by the book. And so we have these technical orders that they give us, and they're like, you follow steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, and that's how, you know, don't deviate from that.
Well, you can understand why. I mean, hydraulics is what controls most of the flight surfaces on most aircraft. You mess that up, you kill people.
Exactly. You know, and a good example of that is there was a case where there was an F-16 crash back in the maybe early to mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And investigation, they went back and they found out that the guys that had worked on this aircraft, they had miswired the flight controls. So when the pilot went to turn left, they turned right, and burying the plane in the ground, right?
Hopefully he got out.
You know, I don't recall what happened. I just remember it was a multi-million dollar aircraft, so somebody had to answer for that, right?
Right, and clearly a hydraulics maintenance failure, too. That's pretty frightening.
Right. So what happens is they went back and they looked at, hey, what happened in this situation? And it turns out it wasn't actually the mechanic's fault.
Oh.
He followed the documentation to the T. And it said, plug this wire in here, plug this wire in here. And had they maybe not missed that in their writing of that document, they would have noticed that, hey, that's backwards.
Wow.
And that would alleviate that problem. So that kind of leads me into, you know, another example of, you know, maybe we're working in our Exchange environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have our documentation, TechNet, all of those great things out there. the design document that we have for our environment. And, you know, we follow that to the T, we get it set up, we get everything working. And then a few months later, you know, someone comes in and says, hey, I need a new connection, you know, maybe a send connector, receive connector, something like that set up. And, your administrator goes out and he says, sure, I'll do this, but maybe he doesn't follow that, you know, his design document, or doesn't go in and update that with that new information.
Right.
And so the next shift comes in, or, you know, 6 months later, you know, somebody comes in and they're like, hey, where did this come from?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, even worse, the next shift comes in and mail's not flowing. You know, now you have to look at, well, where did this change come from? Who did it? Why'd they do it? All those great things. So, so that's really what I'm looking at with Exchange, or with the configuration management.
It's mostly just keeping a good trail of what got changed, how it got changed, and why it got changed.
Exactly. Exactly. I would say, you know, in my own opinion, a lot of the issues I see as a dedicated engineer, you know, with the different customers I've worked with, a conservative guess would be 75-80% of the issues I see come from people making changes, you know, it just, and then not going back and documenting those changes or testing those changes before they ever come out of the chute, you know?
And you get these sort of unintended consequences.
Exactly.
I see this around domain-related stuff, especially a group policy change that makes sense on one side, but causes problems on another, and they're fairly hard to test. And even when you initially make the change, it does what you want it to do, but it's not until it propagates across everything that some of these problems start rolling back in.
Right. You know, just recently, had a customer, and I love this statement because I hear it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I came in and they were trying to open up an XML document, just something simple in SharePoint, you know, and they said, you know, I don't know what's up. Nothing changed. It's, and you know, I told them, I was like, although you can say you didn't change anything, there's a good chance something changed.
Right. But isn't the real question, so how do you know nothing's changed?
Exactly.
And if the only thing is because I didn't change anything, it says, well, you're not the only one out there, so could have been something else.
And you know, if you're in an environment where you have multiple images of clients, you know, maybe you've got Outlook 2003, you got Outlook 2007, you got Outlook 2010, you know, all your different office versions, you know, those are things that matter. You have to take into account whenever you're designing your environment. You know, it kind of leads me into, you know, planning your environment. That's a key thing. I just yesterday, I heard a great, and you have to forgive me, I'm from Tennessee, so sometimes my southern accent messes up people's names, but I believe he was the Chinese general Sun Tzu.
Yep. Art of War?
The Art of War, exactly. He had a quote that says, every battle is won or lost before it's ever fought.
Right.
So if you plan your environment before you go into it and you ask the questions of, you know, why do I need this? Okay, so one of the tools that's out there that is accessible to anybody. I don't know if you've heard, maybe not, but we have what's called the Microsoft Operations Framework. It's similar to ITIL, and yeah, one of the key differences with Microsoft Operations Framework is, where ITIL gives you the concepts and the terminology, MOF gives you the ability to implement those solutions.
So more directly, I mean, ITIL is very abstract. It's not specific about anything other than some approaches, and it's a tough read, but it's good stuff.
Right.
So is MOF much more product centric, that this talks about Microsoft tools and how to utilize them?
No, you know, it gives you a way to approach your IT life cycle.
Okay.
So any of your services that are out there, so messaging, maybe your configuration management piece through SCCM, or any of those tools, right? Any of those services. And one of the main things there is you have what's, it's broken out into phases and a layer that you have three main phases, plan, deliver, and operate. Mm-hmm. That's part of your IT life cycle. And it, you know, those just continue throughout every day.
So Heath, if I'm going to take advantage of MOF and these sort of different phases, let's put this in the sense of a scenario, getting ready to say expand an Exchange installation. We've hit a point now where there's too many mailboxes for machines. We need to add a few more machines. So maybe you can walk me through, how did I figure out that was the problem and the sort of management part and the planning, following MOF to plan, deliver, and operate the additional servers?
Right. So part of the planning phase, you take the feedback that comes out of your operation.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find, you know, maybe through your daily checks or whatever, you're taking performance hits or memory hits on your servers. They're just not able to keep up.
Right. Disk space full, machines are running high-level CPU, memory largely consumed, and maybe even the customer out there is complaining about how slow their mailbox opens.
Right, right. So, which I have a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I have a customer that's sitting out at another site, and so they had a pipe constraint. And so they're having a real hard time connecting to their mailboxes. They are talking about that sluggish response time.
Sure.
It's
a WAN connection that's just only got so much bandwidth?
Right, right. So one of the things my customer was looking at is, how do you fix that? So we were like, well, you know, maybe we can put some servers out at that site,
right,
you know, and give them their own servers.
Start pushing the mailboxes local to them so they're not generating quite so much traffic.
Exactly, right. So that's what we did. You know, we took that information, and they looked at it. They started to build a plan. They said, you know, how many servers do we need? So they looked at how many users they had.
Sure.
They looked at the cost, you know. They looked at the storage requirements, you know, everything from, do we need backups at this site? Are we going to be able to make copies of our databases?
Sure.
with 2010? Right?
And I guess you got to compare that against expanding that WAN connection and the monthly cost of a bigger pipe.
Right. So that's exactly what they did. And so that leads into, hey, you know, we got that deployed, and now we're looking at, okay, let's put some users on it.
Mm-hmm.
And test it. So you go into that next phase, your delivery phase, and you say, okay, is everything, you know, before we roll everybody out,
yep,
let's make sure that, you know, we got 10, 15, 20 users that, you know, are willing to take that risk of, hey, can you work with us, while we try to deploy your service out there. And then, you know, that takes you right back into operations.
Sure. And yeah, I guess that, you know, several orders of planning here. You came up with a plan around whether to expand the pipe or move the servers. Then when you'd agreed to move the servers, you make a plan of what needs to actually be moved. Even after you move them, there's still the whole migration piece. That's a different thing. So now you take a subset of the users and actually move them to that new set of servers and then monitor the results.
Right.
So, and then ultimately, if all everything's good, you're going to finish the migration, get everyone across, and not need to expand that WAN pipe after all.
Exactly. Right.
It sounds simple, but actually having a good checklist, and I'm thinking back to your Air Force experience of just making sure you've checked everything and you're doing things in the right order.
Yeah. What we often run into, depending on the customer and their maturity, sometimes they approach it from a, hey, let's just deploy this and put it out there. They see the problem and they think there's a quick fix answer.
Right.
You know, maybe if you step back a couple of versions of Exchange and you think about deploying from your environment, say you're running on Exchange 2003, and
right,
and you're like, hey, I want to jump to Exchange 2010 to meet whatever requirements you have for your organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe you have those administrators / engineers out there that say, okay, well, let's build this environment. We had four servers for Exchange 2003. We had SAN storage, all of this great stuff to make 2003 work. Well, they say, we'll just use that same design and we'll throw that out there with Exchange 2010.
Sure.
Well, if you go back and you look at the IO requirements, let's just use storage, for example. Well, there was a increase in optimization for IO from 2003 to Exchange 2007. I believe it was like, 30% increase. And then from 2007 to 2010, there was like another 70% increase in IO. So, they came in, they introduced the whole idea of using JBOD.
Right. We've actually done a whole show around the fact that storage is so dramatically different in 2010 Exchange.
Right.
You know, I think it's a really interesting point that just making the upgrades is not enough. You don't presume the old hardware runs the new stuff the same. You have to look at those changes.
Right. And that, you know, once again, goes back to that planning piece and the communication piece. You know, like I said earlier, you have a maturity that has to take place in your organization that allows your administrators to communicate to their management that, mm-hmm. hey, we don't need this any longer. You know, we could go with a much cheaper solution, you know, possibly, right?
Yeah, the whole idea of moving off of a SAN is quite awesome, actually.
Yeah. I always, you know, I'm a hunter. Mm-hmm. I grew up hunting. I just took my oldest son to hunter safety a few weeks back.
Yep.
And, they had a great example of, you know, we were talking about IT maturity, you know, the administrative maturity, the organization's maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things they talked about in that hunter safety class was the different levels of maturity that a hunter goes through. And you know, you have that maybe young guy, it could be older guy, the first time they go out hunting, they just want to shoot, right?
Yeah,
They just want to go out and they just want to shoot the gun. But then as they go out and they hopefully are with more experienced hunters, mm-hmm. and they start to see that you're looking for that trophy deer now instead of just shooting any deer that walks by. And then as you continue to mature, you know, they go into what's called a sportsman stage where they help their administrators come along and, they become that mentor.
Right.
So you look at the reason why I say this is, one of the key points that I made a while ago was that the communication piece. I feel like there's, you have those administrators out there and I'm not knocking it because at one time I was that same person, you know, where I wanted to hoard my information.
Right.
So that I was the only one that could do my job. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you learn as you grow older, sharing all that information makes you more valuable than you hoarding it. You know, you're able to, if you're in an organization, you're able to communicate, hey, I no longer need this type of storage for Exchange. And you communicate that to your IT managers and the organization and you tell them, hey, you know, we can save X amount of dollars if we go this route. And, now you become more valuable to the entire organization and the people around you. So
it does speak to a more mature style of thinking of such, you know, first off, actually knowing the cost of the infrastructure you're running. And then being able to make that assessment, you know, think in terms of return on investment, not just who's got the cool new toys.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, going back to, you know, when I said that less mature hunter, mm-hmm. you know, they just want to go out and shoot something. So you see those guys that come in and they say, hey, Exchange 2013 just got released. Let's deploy it. Well, why?
Yeah. What's it getting us?
You know, for me as a PFE, I'm like, yeah, great. Let's look at your organization and I'm all for it. Let's deploy Exchange 2013. But at the same time, what exactly are you addressing? I recall one of your shows, I guess it's been a few months back, mm-hmm. and one of the topics was, I believe it was the ability for users to fax capability was removed from one of the versions of Exchange.
Right.
As they moved into a newer version, and I believe into Exchange 2010. So, and as you mentioned in that show, you have to look at, hey, what's going away? What am I losing?
Yeah. The actual going through the what's new and really understanding the list of how things are different and being able to do those assessments. I also feel like we often don't maintain the documentation on how many mailboxes have we got? How many access points are we using? How many WAN connections are we using? Because you've got to feed all that into the new system to be able to actually have a picture of what that infrastructure requirement is going to be.
Right.
There's so many steps before deploying the new software.
Right. Which that leads into another great segue. Mm-hmm. You mentioned documentation. One of the things I'm doing with a customer now is having them baseline their environment. Okay, you guys have X number of servers. Here's all of your configurations. Document what you can manually, and then also look at, hey, how can you automate this baseline? You know, to make sure that when changes occur, when something happens, when something's new added, you'll know. There's a great tool that's out there as part of the System Center suite. The Desire Configuration Management tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's helped my customers immensely. You know, they go out and it takes some footwork in the beginning to make sure that you have everything you need.
Sure.
But you know, if you put out there that, hey, we have X number of receive connectors in our environment and they have this setting on them and X, Y, and Z, and then they can come back and, you know, if something changes, let's say you have that administrator makes a change in the previous shift, and then you come in and you look at either the web display or you get the email saying, hey, here's what's going on in your environment, and you say, hey, this changed, you know. So you can document those things either through your design documentation or configuration tools like DCM.
Right.
Another great tool that I almost forgot about is service mapping.
And just before we go past this, is DCM actually just part of Configuration Manager?
You know, I'd have to go out and look to see if it's a part. I don't believe it's. I think it's an add-on, but I'm not a System Center guy, so I would have to go back and do some research on that.
Yeah, they're configuration packs for Configuration Manager.
Right, they are. So you a lot of times they have like the Exchange 2010. Configuration pack that has a lot of stuff already in it, stuff like that.
And it's I think it's one of the great goals as you get into Configuration Manager is trying to make sure that every box under your control has a configuration set in ConfigMan so that you could replace it at any time. And then that effectively becomes your documentation. The current configurations that are run there are essentially a copy inside of ConfigMan.
Right.
And I think it's a powerful thing. It's in a lot of ways it's the ultimate documentation because it's actually what you're doing.
Right. Like you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Or we had spoken earlier about the different office tools that maybe you have two or three different versions in your environment. That's mm-hmm. another thing you can look at. Templating your deployments. You know, making sure that all of your clients are running the same versions.
Right.
It cuts down on troubleshooting. Immensely.
So what about service mapping? I interrupted you there.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
So with the service mapping, that's one of the greatest tools I think an admin can have in front of them. It gives you a good diagram of, let's say for Exchange, overall, your service would be messaging. So everything that ties into that, maybe you have your mobile devices that tie into that, everything from your boundary, you know, what supports your boundary? What are you connected to there?
Mm-hmm.
Your DCs, you know, what antivirus is running on your server? So all of this is diagrammed out so that you can see that, hey, in order for my messaging environment to work, I've got, maybe you have BlackBerry running in your environment or Good Mobile. Or
I mean, you just think through the stuff that's Exchange, Active Directory, dependency on DNS, the hardware itself, the connectivity pieces, firewalls, antivirus. Like there's a lot of parts to actually getting email delivered successfully.
Right. So that tool, having that in front of you as an administrator and having to go back and troubleshoot issues, that having that in front of you is a way to say you don't have to put it, keep it all in your head.
Right.
You know, you're looking at it on the wall. Maybe you got a big poster on the wall of how your messaging environment looks. And so as you're thinking, it's like, okay, why would X break? You know, and you look up and you're like, oh, you know, well, mail comes in through that boundary device or whatever, you know? So yeah, configuring or documenting that is a huge, I believe is a huge tool. And that makes the organization successful.
Just having all that information in one place so that you can actually get it organized. Again, this doesn't seem like it's a product. It's just a set of practices, part of MOF, service mapping.
So yeah, it is, you know, it does come into play with MOF. It's definitely a, if you go out to the MOF link, which I will include, you know, that way your listeners can go out and find it. But you go out to that link and there's just this a magnitude of information out there on how to even just to get started in MOF and how to, continue through all those processes and service mapping is one of those.
Yeah, it does seem like a way to just organize your thinking around, how you take care of these services and plan for the changes, what to do when there is a new version and you want to consider it.
Right. And you know, one other thing about that is when I look at an organization, say it's a larger organization and, you know, you have your different services, going back to service mapping, you have your different services.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe your messaging shop, maybe those guys are a little bit, maybe they're more, you look at the maturity model, maybe they're a little bit, more progressed in their maturity model where they're documenting everything. They're being very proactive versus reactive in their fixing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you've got your other shop, maybe your AD guys, maybe they're a little bit behind the power curve there and they're not documenting all their changes. They're not, so as an organization, you have to rely on one another. And again, going back to communication, having those exchange guys reaching out to those AD guys and say,
sure,
hey, we're doing this or vice versa.
Well, there's such a strong dependency between the two. So, you know, you'd hope
definitely
those guys would be pretty close together.
Yeah. But you know, I'm with customers that sometimes they're not, sometimes the AD guy and the exchange guy is the same person, you know, they're multi-hatted.
Sure.
But then other times, you know, they set four floors from each other. And oftentimes, you know, depending on the organization, oftentimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing,
sure,
sometimes. And that can cause a frustrating work environment.
Yeah. Well, and I could, you know, we're in the midst of this right now with Exchange 2013 and the upgrades that need to happen to AD and how do you make interoperability work with the older versions? Like there's some big conversations need to happen there before this next round of upgrades happen.
Right.
Yeah. Not an easy thing. And certainly getting everybody to talk to each other. I'm a big believer in pizza, you know,
definitely.
If those guys are even remote, if they're on separate floors, you need to have a lunch. Like that's the way to get that conversation rolling.
Yep. Bring in donuts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, nothing wrong with donuts. That'll help it along. Food is the great conversational lubricant. Well, Heath, where do we go from here? If I haven't really had a chance to explore MOF before, where should I be looking?
It's out on TechNet.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'll include the link. But if you just do a search for Microsoft Operations Framework,
mm-hmm,
the last version out there, I believe, is 4.0.
Yep.
So if you want to go out and start there, and they really did a good job at breaking it down into all the different categories. So start on the first page and just start reading.
Start working your way through it.
There's a lot of information on it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's been great.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.